And good Monday to all of you. Welcome to the Rightstream Radio Network and Military Monday. I am your host, John Gresham, and it is a vile, nasty, rainy, evil winter day here in Washington. But it's Christmas week, so we figure it'll all work out before it's all said and done. And we hope that you've enjoyed our shows this past year or two. And as we do it from time to time, we're going to take a little break from authors and books and history and other things and come back and talk a little bit about the men and women who are the core of this nation's national security, the people who make up our military forces and wear the uniforms, volunteering at their own hazard for the service, and the veterans, the people, the men, the women who have already served, and we need to keep our promises to. I have the pleasure today of doing this show with a good friend, a lady I respect a lot. I had the pleasure of meeting a couple years ago, who ironically grew up in the same hometown with me, Huntington Beach, California. She was more of a beach goer than I was at a rival high school down the street. Her name is Donna Lyons, and for those of you who might not know Donna, you can find her featured on both Facebook and Twitter. She is a military news journalist. She's an author. I believe having her second book come out shortly. She's been a talk show host and a managing editor. She's currently based here in D.C., but she also does a lot of work out in California, particularly in Sacramento. She's been featured on national news broadcasts such as Fox News, as well as local shows. She's worked with me on publications, including the Fair Count Media Group's various veterans and other materials. She's done, good Lord, it's hard to go ahead and say everything she's done. We'll try and work some of that in. She has even had her own television show, done better than me, known as Armed Forces Weekly. Talking, obviously, about topics involving the military and veterans. So without further ado, Donna, introduce yourself a little more than that.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me. Really, that's about it. But first and foremost, I'm a military spouse to a recently retired colonel of 29 years. And the book that I wrote was called 12 Army Wives Give the Best Advice They Never Got, which featured Beth Corelli, wife of a four-star general, Peter Corelli, and many people know who he is. It was basically an unprecedented look into the real Army wives, you know, unlike the television show. So, I mean, I think you hit everything. There's not much more to tell.
Well, you keep it up a few years, you're going to have a resume almost as long as mine, and you've packed a lot in just a very few years of working. You've also done something else, which is, as you pointed out, you're a military and veteran spouse, something that happened this year. Not all of that story being of your choosing, but you've definitely made lemonade out of lemons. But you've also been around the military. You've been a supporter. You cover the military and veterans. And we're going to spend the next hour or so talking about the state of the force from the standpoint not of procurement and units and deployments, though some of that will come into being in our conversation, but the people. Because more than anything else, I think you and I would agree, the military is about people, as is the veterans community. And I'd like to get some of your thoughts about how you feel about military people and veterans.
Well, we owe them everything. And the way they're being treated with the VAs and the pink slipping, which is the CERB, the early retirement, it needs to change. There are so many out there, and especially after Iraq and Afghanistan, we already had a lot of veterans. We had the Vietnam veterans, and we still have a lot of World War II veterans that have come back with PTSD and TBI, and they need the treatment, but they sit and they wait in the VA centers for hours, and it shouldn't be that way. It needs to change. And now with the Iraq and Afghanistan veterans coming in, we have a lot more. so it's just building up, and, you know, it needs to change. I think there's a lot of great organizations out there that help our veterans. I'm involved with many of them. Probably one of my favorite is one that I'm board of directors. I'm president board of directors is hopelivesthere.org, and we're actually in the process of making a documentary about wounded veterans, and we are taking them to El Camino de Santiago on the pilgrimage in Spain, and it was actually shown in the movie The Way. And so we're taking these veterans from Vietnam, some of them, and Iraq and Afghanistan, and we are going to document their pilgrimage all the way to the cathedral. From there, we're going to go to Normandy, and from there, we're going to end up at Arlington National Cemetery. And all this is going to be documented on a feature-length documentary, and we are being produced by Lou Rita Productions, and the producer will be Scott Rita. We're very excited about it. So right now, Hope Lives There is we're raising funds so that we can take these guys on this trip and hope that the movie can bring awareness to changing the suicide rates. They're just way too high. This is ridiculous. 22 a day, totally uncalled for. They need our help, and so we are hoping that we can help them. Also involved with another great organization, the Wounded Walk. These guys are fantastic. They, Adam Shatarsky walked from Camp Pendleton to Washington, D.C. to raise money and awareness for all our wounded veterans. And we are working actually with them and another great organization. So there's so many out there that are good. And then you've got these other organizations that you need to watch out for, and we'll touch on that a little bit later. But our veterans deserve the utmost respect, and I truly believe that we could do a hell of a lot more than we're doing right now.
We are going to cover a lot more of this as we go on through the hour. But let's start with the first thing that we brought up, and that's the issue of our force is downsizing. Congress and the White House, in their wisdom, have decided to decrease the manpower count within the military, and is doing so in by obviously going and decommissioning units. I mean, there are any number of units in all the services that are casing their colors and just going away. But when you do that, you've got to go and decide what you're going to do about the people. And yeah, it would be nice to say that we're keeping our best and brightest, but instead we're looking at how many people are in at a particular rank in a particular year group and just firing them. Talk a little bit about the process of pink slipping. How does it work, and just how pseudo-random is it right now?
Well, pink slipping, or SERB, and a lot of people ask, what is SERB? It's Selective Early Retirement Board. And this is just the first part of a move with the Army to meet its congressionally mandated, you know, strength reduction. It started with about 500 colonels and 700 lieutenant colonels in the Army competitive category, which met the criteria for the SERB. And many officers opted to apply for voluntary retirement rather than go through the pink slipping. An officer could put in for retirement before a certain time and plan the retirement before they became part of the SERB. The people that met the criteria for that SERB included active duty colonels in the Army competitive category who have been a colonel for more than 5 years, and lieutenant colonels who had been at least twice non-selected for promotion to colonel. So those are the people they targeted. And it's not just about force reduction. It's also about shaping and ensuring opportunities for other officers to move up in rank. Personally, it's just all about money to me. I think it has nothing to do with that. They're running out of funds, and so they're getting rid of people, and it has nothing to do with shaping. To me, it doesn't. But what we've seen in the last 10 years or so is that the average officer is staying in about 10% longer than the normal, and colonels that may have retired at 25 years of service 10 years ago are now staying for 30, and you know, and this is the older generation of officers. They're truly doing it because they love it. They stay in because they love it. It has nothing to do with money. I mean, it's just what they've done for 30 years. It also hit captains and majors. They were selected as well. They had to have, I think it was officers that were eligible to go before the CERB had to have 18 more years of service. And if those officers were selected by the board, they're entitled to serve until their 20th year and retire then. And then they can choose to apply for TERA, which is Temporary Early Retirement Authority, so they can retire early.
And this is going to eventually affect everybody down to non-commissioned officers, sergeants, and warrants eventually, won't it?
You know, I don't know at this point. I know they're starting with, you know, the people that make more money. So to me, that's all about money. It has nothing to do with they're running out of money. To me, that's what it's about. But as of today, Army Secretary John McHugh is allowing approximately like 120 officers that were chosen for forced retirement from the Army to leave with full benefits. And so it's reversing the policy that would have forced those officers to retire at their highest enlisted rank if they spent fewer than 8 years as an officer. Essentially, it would have been a demotion in rank and retirement pay. And the Army also said that there were 44 officers that were improperly chosen for forced retirement, and now they would be allowed to continue serving. So, I mean, it's just a crazy time right now.
Yeah, and we saw last week a pair of conflicting stories, one that from Secretary of the Air Force Deborah James, that she had felt that the erosion of talent in the officers was actually hurting the force, lowering morale and obviously reducing capability. And so she announced there would be no further forced retirements. Yet at the same time last week, very quietly on Friday, it was announced that a C-17 wing out at McChord Air Force Base is going to have one of its squadrons decommissioned in 2017, which will result in 400 billets being lost, including a third of them being officers of various ranks. So it's obviously not a policy that is well, shall we say, set in concrete, nor is it being properly implemented. And you yourself had a very real personal experience with this process last year. And if you don't mind sharing that, I think the listeners would appreciate what it means on the ground for real people like yourself.
Right. Well, I was in California doing my television show, and my husband was deployed in Afghanistan, and he was supposed to be there for 2 years. January, I got a call saying he was going to come home. He had gotten pink slip. He had served 29 years, and I'm thinking, why couldn't they just give him one more year and let him go to 30? It just didn't make sense to me. He literally had like 5 days to get out of Afghanistan and come home. I had to leave my television show. We moved back to Washington, D.C., try to find a house. It was ridiculous. But to get that call, and I'm sure it was a slap in the face to him. I can't even imagine being a colonel for 20, you know, now you're a colonel and you've served 29 years, thinking you got one more year, and you're in a war zone. And they're telling you, okay, you're being pink slipped. You've got to leave the war zone, and you've got to go home now. You're done. He had another 6 months before he officially retired when he came back, which was September, beginning of September, he officially retired after 29 years. And I want to thank him for his – that's a long time. He has deployed many times. He's been in war zones many times. He commanded in Iraq from, I believe, 2003 to 2005 in Beijing. With the big red one. And, you know, just to see him go at that way, I just think they could have handled it differently. I think
this is a man who had great ratings. Yeah, this is a guy who had very good ratings all through his career.
Correct. Oh, yeah. But I think someone that's deployed in a war zone, they should not be even part of the process. Let them finish out what they're doing. He was a very integral part of something that was happening there, and so to pull him out is it was just stupid, as far as I'm concerned. So he comes back, and you know, now our whole lives are changed. What now? He has to look for a job. Well, with all these colonels being pink slipped, and all these lieutenant colonels, everyone's looking for a job in D.C. Everyone's looking for a job all over. So you've got these people that most of them have two master's degrees. He does. It was very difficult. It was a six-month process, found work. 6 months. And even when he found out he got the job, it was still another process to get in, to get his foot in the door there back over at the Pentagon. He's still doing what he was doing before, but now he's on the civilian side. But, you know, it's just a difficult process. I can't imagine how he feels. We'll be watching military shows, or they'll be having something about veterans, you know, documentary or something, and I can tell he truly misses it. These are, you know, these are the guys that have been in there for a long time, and they started very young, and you know, it was their whole life. So to see it completely turned around, it's very difficult. It's difficult for the spouses. You know, that have to deal with now, what are we going to do? You know, a lot of times these younger people, the captains and majors, they don't make the kind of money a colonel does. And so they may live paycheck to paycheck. They may have little kids. How do they deal with it? It's a very scary and hard situation.
And on top of it, you're being thrown to the wolves, not only professionally, but you're suddenly being thrown into a retirement system that is hardly what we would call healthy. And oh, by the way, smile, you get to go start dealing with the Department of Veterans Affairs to boot.
Well, that's the other thing I was going to tell you, is that he had to go through every physical on the planet, you know, ears, eye, you know, the full gamut of everything, to get out of the military. And the minute he got out, then he had to go do all the same stuff again with the VA. It's ridiculous. The whole process is ridiculous. It's very unfair. And his record should have stood for the VA when he got out of the military. I mean, he had just done all these doctor's appointments and then had to turn around and do them all again within a matter of a month for the
VA. We'll talk more about the Department of Veterans Affairs in a couple of minutes. Let's just talk about a couple of other issues, because let's face it, pink slipping was only one of the most obvious insults to our men and women in the military this year. On top
right.
of which, for those who are still in, they have been given a magnificent 1% pay raise in the fiscal year 15 budget. I'm imagining Congress will award itself something better before this is over. And as if that isn't bad enough, there's also word that for those retirees who are in the TRICARE system, which is the military health system, there's now word that the Department of Health and Human Services would like to dump them into Obamacare, just to take all of the retirees out of TRICARE and give them over to HHS.
Right.
What do you see? What other things are you seeing in the erosion of benefits for military personnel and their families? And how does this, you know, affect the people you know who are still in?
Well, to be quite honest, I'm not really savvy on the whole TRICARE issue and what's happening with that. We are in TRICARE. I have no problems, but I'm in standard, and I know with Prime, then you're stuck going to whatever, you know, facility is closest to you. Ours is Fort Belvoir. It's a beautiful, beautiful hospital and, you know, great place to go for doctor's appointments. I just choose to pay for my own doctors because I'm kind of weird that way. I like to have my own thing, but I don't want to be stuck in that mass over there. You know, I see the long lines over there. I see, you know, I had blood work done over there for a doctor's appointment that I had, and my doctor never received it. And I thought, oh, my God, they just had to fax it that day right when I was done, faxed it right over saying it was done, and they never received it. So I had to go back and track it again. So I think it's just a lack of customer service per se right now that I can see. As far as the funding and you know, mashing us up with Obamacare, I have not read much about that. I have not heard that much about it until it happens. I guess, you know, I'm not going to worry about it.
Probably the best attitude at this point, since one hopes Congress will protect the force from such erosion. But you bring
right.
up a good point, and that is you're just beginning your journey with the Department of Veterans Affairs, and if there was any agency of the federal government which had a bad year in 2014, it was probably VA. I mean, let's face it. There were the various scandals regarding scheduling and manager bonuses at the hospitals, the forced termination of the top two SES appointees, including General Shinseki. This has been a rough year, and of course, how does it reflect upon? How do you feel about it now that you and your husband are about to become part of their customer base on top of it?
Well, we're seeing bits and pieces of it. You know, this whole thing with his appointments, he had an eye doctor appointment, and we're right next door to Belvoir. But they sent him literally on the other side of Baltimore for this appointment, and there was no reason for it. So I think it's a lack of communication, scheduling, that kind of thing. That's what I'm seeing right now. I'm not seeing so much the bad stuff. I hear the stories, but for us in general, it's not happening. I think the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, Bob McDonald, you know, he went into this whole thing with a massive mess on his hands, and this guy he's got great leadership, and he's a veteran himself. He graduated West Point, great business background, and I think he can turn it around. I think with the help of, you know, government officials, he'll be able to do this, but it's going to take a great deal of time to change. It's a mess. I mean, it's a huge mess, and like I was saying, with more veterans coming in, it's getting messier and harder to weed this all out. And I know there's not many articles out there right now that are showing proof of change or no change. It's just hard to gauge right now. And if there is any change, it's got to be very minimal, because there's no way with the mess that they were in that it's going to turn around overnight or even in a year. I think it's going to take years. I think people need to have open discussions with the veterans themselves and ask them their personal stories. You know, and ask them how their service is going with the Veterans Affair.
You bring up a good point that, you know, this administration does not have a record of great transparency, nor of dialogue with their customer base, the citizens. And they're going to have it with this particular demographic, because we made a promise as a nation. And it goes back a long way. I mean, let's face it. Abraham Lincoln spoke the words about how we need to go and care for those who have given not just their all, but also parts of their bodies and their lives to military veterans. And you get out there as much or more than anybody I know talking to veterans, working with veterans. What do they have to say about the process? What do they say about their lot in life and how VA affects that positively or negatively?
Well, I can tell you the ones that I've spoken to say it hasn't changed at all. There's still long wait times. There's still very sick vets that need care immediately, and they're not getting it. Like I said, this is going to take a long time. You know, with people not being able to get appointments, I mean, that's what killed the vets that were waiting in Phoenix. Seriously. So it has to change. And I know a lot of people that work for the VA are still complaining. They work there and say, hey, we're still not seeing changes. So what Bob McDonald keeps stressing is that be the whistleblower. Be the whistleblower. They welcome it. They want you to tell your story, your horror story at the VA. You have to go forth with this. You see something happening, you've got to open your mouth. It's not going to change. God knows our veterans are speaking up. Is it changing for them? No, not yet. Do I think it will? Absolutely, at some point. But it's going to take years. Like I said, there's so many veterans that are coming home with visible and invisible injuries that are adding to the patients that have already existed, you know, like our Vietnam vets and World War II vets. So it's just compiling, and so now it's just even messier, and it has to change. It's gonna take a long time. And, you know, the vets deserve so much respect, and the way things were being handled a while back is just, you know, it's looking down on them. And that's just, like, they're worthless, and it's just wrong.
Fair enough. And for those of you who'd like to go and call in and talk to Donna or myself, please feel free to give us a call. Our call-in number is area code 347-945-7246. Again, that's area code 347-945-7246. Donna, you know, I don't want to give everybody the idea that all we've got is gripes, but in terms of the situation with Veterans Affairs, you and I are both people who've worked in business. We've seen processes, good, bad, and different. If you were going and doing one or two things to go ahead and start turning this around, what would you do, or what has been suggested to you by the vets that you've talked to and spend time with?
Well, it's the same thing that keeps coming up. The long wait times and the lack of attention. That has to change. How are they going to do it? I have no clue. That's why they have Bob McDonald in there. He's the businessman. He's a veteran. I think he can really do something different. But like I said, you can talk to the vets, and they're still going to tell you things have not changed. I don't have to deal with that end of it. So I've, you know, as far as us going to the VA or my husband going to the VA, you know, they don't have to. We don't have to deal with that, but you hear these guys telling the stories, especially the Vietnam vets. I mean, they've been pushed off and pushed off for so long. It has to change. So let's hope that this guy that's in there now will be better than the last person and make some changes. But, you know, it comes down to government officials, too, helping him. It's not just him doing it. It's not all on his shoulders. There's a lot of hands in the fire.
Yeah, and we have to realize that time marches on whether we do something or not, and we're seeing the very end of the greatest generation. The World War II vets are passing literally thousands every day, and we're going to be seeing the end of them in more or less as a group in the next 5 years. And we're already starting to see serious erosions in the populations of Korean War veterans, Vietnam veterans, and beginning to see the first generation of Cold War veterans beginning to pass. I mean, this is a huge, huge bow wave of personnel who are passing without getting anything like the benefits that were promised to them. And that's me whining and bitching about things. I apologize to anybody at VA who feels I'm being unfair, but guess what? I don't care.
Well, it hasn't changed much, and if it has, it's probably only a very small amount of change, and it's going to take a very long time. It's a long process. It's been going, like you said, it's been going on for years, and the only way it's going to change is for years. It's going to take years for it to change. It took years to get that way. It's going to take years to get out, and unfortunately, there's more people coming in, and let's hope that this guy that's in there, like I said, can do something really good.
In terms of overall the people that you deal with, what what are the present generation of veterans who have gotten out over the past 10 to 12 years? What kind of people are they? What, talk about the greatest generation, the World War II vets, and you and I have spent more than our share of time around those people, all of whom are almost universally beloved and wonderful people. What about the younger ones, the ones that are young enough to be our kids, or your kids, since I haven't had any that I know of? What kind of veterans experience are the youngest of our veterans having as they get out? What do you see about the children of 9/11 who have fought?
Well, I can tell you they're all struggling. I mean, not all of them. We know that TBI and PTS is huge right now, and almost all of them come home with some form of it. A lot of them coming home with lost limbs, and it's sad, actually. But I think we are working hard to help them. I think there's a lot of organizations out there that are wonderful in helping these young guys. Everyone that I've met is very humble. I have not met anyone who is just obnoxious and brags about it and blah, blah, blah. They are very humble. These are kids that went, you know, these young kids that went over there and fought for us so we could sit here at home and be safe. We owe them a gratitude of thanks. I mean, we owe them so much more than what they're getting, and I hope that it does turn around. I know the public itself, civilians and military families, all gather together, and we do as much as we can. But as far as the medical process, that's a different story. But like I said, there's other organizations out there that are willing to help these guys, and they know where to go to get that help now. I mean, I think everything's pretty visible as far as where you can go to get the help. But, yeah, they're amazing. I thank all of them for serving, every single one of them. Every service, every rank, everything. I mean, it's just amazing. We wouldn't be here if it wasn't for them.
Well, we certainly would have had a lot more of the kinds of terrorist activity after 9/11 that, frankly, has not happened as much as we probably all feared at the time. Let's talk a little bit, though, about let's talk about three things real quick that they do seem to be struggling with. One, obviously, is the PTSD and the TBI, which are the signature wounds of this war, be it from IEDs, from RPGs. The shock to the body and to the mind has just been amazingly significant. At the same time, a side effect of that has been the rash of suicides. And you bring up a point, because we've got a hard number now that we're living with, which is 22 a day. That's not just unacceptable. That's horrific. That's amazingly bad. And then finally, as you point out, again, a side effect of that signature set of injuries, we've got a lot of kids coming home missing parts.
Right.
Are we beginning as a nation to deal with those, both emotionally and beginning to reach out to these young people?
Well, first, so people know what PTSD is. It's a stress disorder. It's a type of anxiety disorder, and it occurs after you have gone through an extreme emotional trauma that involved the threat of injury or death, and it changes your life forever. Traumatic brain injury is a complex injury with a broad spectrum of symptoms and disabilities. Its impact on a person, you know, it can be devastating. So, you know, and that usually happens when the head is hit, loud explosions, that type of thing. And I know there's another one that goes along with that, and my friend Michael Dodder talked about it, and I think it's chronic, I want to say chronic brain encephalitis or something of that nature. And that's happening with football players, and that's degenerative. So that keeps getting worse and worse.
Yeah, the more you get hit, the more the degeneration gets worse.
Right, and there's
along.
A name for it. I think that's what it is. I can't remember. It's a different name than traumatic brain injury. And as far as the veterans, there was a figure released by the Department of Veterans Affairs in February, and it's on their own data. And they're saying that it could be a little bit more than 22 a day. And that's like a suicide every 65 minutes within a 24-hour period.
So basically every hour of every day we're losing one.
Yes, yes. And that's over 800 a year. It's very sad.
And I believe it was pointed out that we've lost more service personnel to suicide after they came home than we've ever lost in combat since 9/11.
I don't know about that statistic, but I will look it up and see if that is correct. But I'm not aware of that one.
That one's been talked about a bit of late. Now,
oh, okay.
We've talked about a lot of negatives. We said some things that, let's face it, would make a hyena cry. Let's talk about some of the good parts. And there are good parts, because out there are private citizens, you being one of them. I've done some work for a couple of organizations. People who have not been willing to just sit there and let it happen, but who have taken their own time, their own money, their own energy, and formed NGOs, non-governmental organizations, to go out and deal with particular facets of the problems for veterans and service personnel. Talk a little bit about how you view these NGOs and the work they do.
Well, you know, there's many out there. I think you have to be careful. For instance, like our organization, we're raising funds to make this documentary, and all these smaller organizations too. We have to, you know, help them, because they will make a difference. I mean, once you get to something like the Wounded Warrior Project, they're huge. Yes, they do a lot of good. They've done a lot of good for people, but you're getting mixed reviews now because it's getting so large. That doesn't mean they're doing a bad thing. When you're an organization, you start small. When you get large to that capacity, it takes a lot of money to run it. So you really have to look at the organization itself, who's running it, look at the reviews. I mean, there's a lot of information out there.
Good example, one that you and I know to be a pretty good organization, is a little one called the Special Operations Warrior Foundation. It does one thing and one thing only, and that is it funds educations, high school educations, college, university, or vocational school for the sons and daughters of special operations personnel killed in training or in action. It's small, relatively speaking, but it's got an A1 rating from the people who track this. Talk a little bit about the people who are doing just little bits of work and how powerful those organizations can be to the vets they serve.
Well, again, it's there are so many out there. You have to be really careful who you're going to donate to. The Navy SEAL Foundation, you know, I did a big article about them twice. With Fair Count and one of the magazines that you and I both write for. And I found that to be a great foundation. They take care of the families of Navy SEALs that have been killed. And they completely 100% take care of these families. The Special Forces Foundation, same thing. Green Beret Foundation. You've got a lot out there. You know, they start out small and some end up large, like Wounded Warrior Project. That is just a huge organization, and that's why they're getting complaints. I think when you get to that size, you start losing a little bit of that hometown feel. You don't have it anymore. And so a lot of people don't like that, and they start complaining. And like I said, it doesn't mean they're doing bad things. They're still doing great things. They're just huge now. So there are the smaller ones.
What are some of your favorites over and above the ones you were talking about earlier?
Well, the three I mentioned, Navy SEAL Foundation, the Green Beret Foundation, Special Operations. I like the smaller ones, especially like at Christmas time. There's small ones out there that military families can utilize, all military families, like adopt. Christmas can be hard for military families in general, especially if someone's deployed and if they have children, you know, and they deserve a cheerful Christmas. So there's all these programs out there that will help do that. And so, you know, adopt a family for the holidays. Another one is Full Circle Home, and that gives deployed servicemen a chance to send a gift box to their spouses at home. And it has, like, pampering items in it. And these small ones, he can write a note. And this is all free. They can just go to their website and sign up for it. There's also the military installation support, the family centers at military installations that offer assistance in many forms during the holidays, including a Santa shop, which is, you know, funded by donations that are taken for military families. And you can contact local installations for that assistance, like family readiness groups, the chaplain, or the MWR, which, if someone's asking, that's the morale, welfare, and recreation. Another one is Operation Christmas Spirit. It supports local military families by adopt over like 100 families and fill their wish lists and give gift cards so they can do their own shopping. And they also sponsor gifts and crafts at holiday parties. They adopt single Marines and sailors and give them gifts and gift cards because they're away from their family. Operation Holiday Joy, it's 100% of your donation goes to food and toys for the holidays, and you yourself can designate where you want your donation to go. Like if you have a specific program, they will donate it 100%, which I think is fantastic. The
really
Red Cross.
Is. Right.
Yeah, it is, because you don't see 100% that often. The Red Cross, they provide the families serving, you know, and not limited to financial assistance, you know, at deployment services. They are also in charge of holiday mail for heroes, and that mail goes to veterans and military families within a community, and that's a lot of fun to do, writing letters to the families, and something so small like that is so important to someone, especially a mom that's at home with all her kids, and she gets this wonderful letter from someone saying, "Thank you for your service." You know, she's still at home. She's running the household. She's keeping the home fires burning. Another one is Soldiers Angels. Soldiers Angels sponsors Operation Outreach Holiday Support, and it's for the lower enlisted families. They can sign up to receive $50 to $100 gift cards. They help pay for holiday meals and gifts for the children under the age of 15. They have to sign up for the program before December 15th. And so what I suggest right now, if someone's listening, obviously that's the deadline. We've passed it. Sign up now for next year. It's never too early to sign up. Toys for Tots, the good old U.S. Marine Corps.
Oh, God,
yes. Toys for Tots program. Oh, yeah. They collect the new unwrapped toys during October, November, and December and distribute those toys at Christmas to those less fortunate, and children in the community, which the campaign is conducting. I mean, they're doing it right now. And it's for
and
all
I would
children,
point out,
including
you,
military
you,
kids.
And you bring up a good point, because one of the things that I have always admired about Toys for Tots and the Marine Corps that manages it, they really reach out in a effective, aggressive manner with corporate America, and corporate America responds. I mean, as I walk through stores, such as my bank, SunTrust Bank here in the area, there is the box, and they have collected vast quantities. Other corporations do the same thing. And this is a point that we sometimes forget, is that corporate America has made themselves heard regarding helping care for our veterans and our wounded, correct?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's the big thing is now these larger organizations are donating items, gifts. A lot of them will send boxes of free stuff overseas to the troops and, you know, put a smile on their faces. And that's what they need to do. We need more of that. Also, the other thing I wanted to say is that there's 62 bases here throughout the United States that do trees for troops. So if there's a family that needs a Christmas tree, you can look up trees for troops and see if there's one in your area, and you can get a free tree. That's a big deal. That can be a burden, too, at Christmas time to buy a Christmas tree. They're pretty expensive. They can run $50 to $100. And another organization, don't forget that we have American Legions and VFWs. They'll provide, you know, a variety of holiday support to service members, the families, the veterans. You know, they do meals, foods, gift cards, adopt a family, and adopt a veteran. So we can't forget about, you know, those that have been here for years, those organizations that are staples to our country.
And just to bring it up as well, I know that some people might consider it old school, but there are also the existing military relief funds, Navy and Marine Corps relief being one of them, which constantly take in money, usually donations from within the services themselves, that continue to do yeoman work around the clock, 24/7, 365. I mean, there are a lot of places that people can reach out for help. All they have to do is say, I need help. And let's bring that point up as we start to close out this discussion. How hard is it for someone who's been in the military to say those little words, I need help?
Oh, very hard. A lot of people don't want to admit they have a problem. They don't want to admit it because they think they're going to be a burden to others, and they're not. Anybody that's listening, you are not a burden. Everyone wants to help, and there are so many places out there to get the help, whether it's someone suffering from PTSD or TBI or a military family that's financially strapped. There are so many organizations out there that will help you. So ask for the help. It's so important. Go on Google. Go on your computer and Google all these organizations. They're there, and all you have to do is pick up the phone or email them. If you feel uncomfortable talking to someone, email them and see what they say back. And people can email me too, John. Author1, AUTHOR, and the number 1, at live, LIVE.com. I will talk to anyone. I will help them out, whatever they need. Feel free to, like I said, email me, and if I can help you, I will.
And for our listeners, Donna is also prominently featured on both Facebook and Twitter, so you can reach out to her there as well. And keep in mind, yes, we know you're proud. Yes, we know you're capable. But don't forget, as a nation, as people, we love when you let us into your lives. Donna, I'd like to end this by talking a little bit about what you're going to be doing in the new year and what's happening with you. What's coming in 2015 for you in your profession and in your life? Because obviously this has been a year of vast transition for you and your family.
Yes, it has changed a lot. Well, like I said, currently we're working on the movie documentary where we'll be taking the veterans from Vietnam, Iraq, and Afghanistan to El Camino de Santiago on the spiritual pilgrimage in Spain. The documentary hopefully will be done. Hopefully we'll start filming in towards fall of 2015, and then it should come out end of 2016. I am hopefully going to write another article for you.
For what it's worth, Donna and I have done a lot of writing together for various organizations, and we just discovered a really neat one the other day down at Hurlburt Field, which is the home of the Air Force Special Operations Command. Turns out they have a branch of the Wounded Warrior Program that teaches wounded vets how to surf right there on the Gulf of Mexico at Fort Walton Beach. And right now we're looking for a place to go ahead and place that article. But talk a little bit more also about your book. When is that coming out? Who is the publisher, and when do we expect to see it?
Well, that book is actually, it's done. It's sitting on shelves right now, not in stores at the publisher. I think they were going to make some changes to it. It's 12 nurses give the best advice they never got. And actually, I think it might be 15 nurses now. I had some incredible friends and people I've never met before. And I think her name's Jeanette James from over at the SASC. And she wrote the foreword to the book. And I've got a military nurse in the book, and we've got a hospice nurse in the book. And it's them giving advice and talking about their careers and what they've been through and what it's like to be a nurse. It's actually very interesting, and I learned a lot because I knew nothing about nursing going into this. I actually had to start, doing research. And especially when they come at me with terms, I was like, what the heck is that? And I'd have to Google it because I had no clue. But I actually learned a lot. I think one of my favorite stories in the book was from a hospice nurse, Dawn Forrest. She was amazing. But her story is so moving, so spiritual. You don't realize what a hospice nurse actually goes through until you read her story. And it gives me chills thinking about it. And my other book, obviously, 12 Army Wives Give the Best Advice They Never Got, is doing very well still. Anybody who'd like a signed copy, email me. I will get it to you. That's it right now. My main focus is going to be on the movie with hopelivesthere.org. People can go to our website and check it out. We're really trying to move forward with that. And like I said, the other organization we're working with is the Wounded Walk. These guys are Marines. They're phenomenal, and very excited to be working with them and going along on the pilgrimage with us. I'm actually going too. Is that scary? We're going to be walking like 13, 16 miles a day with packs on.
I might want to take the quad 4x4 as opposed to try to walk that far, but I'd love to go along with you guys. Donna, I want to thank you so much for everything you do, as well as coming on today and sharing your experiences. It's always a pleasure to have you here. You're always welcome to come back whenever you've got something to say. And to you and yours, have a great holiday season, and I hope we talk to you again soon.
Thanks, John. I really appreciate it. And I just want to say God bless to all those who are serving this great country of ours. And a huge thank you. Right now, I'd like to say a huge thank you to all those serving our country on U.S. soil today, our police officers, firefighters, and first responders for putting their lives on the line every single day they go to work. What's happening right now is a travesty, and I really hope that this country can get it together because it is not looking good. We are totally an embarrassment, and I fear for those people that go out there every single day on our soil that could get injured. So pray for them. That's all I ask. And John, to you, a very Merry Christmas as well. And I will be talking to you soon, I'm sure.
Oh, probably sooner than either of us want, but yes. Anyway, have a great, great time, and thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
And with that, we come to the end of another edition of Military Monday. I want to thank again everybody who was kind enough to call and listen in this year. I've had a lot of fun. We're hopefully going to still do one more show next week. But the new year promises a lot of things and a lot of great, great opportunities to learn, to share, and to show appreciation for our military personnel and veterans. To all of you, a Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, a fruitful Kwanzaa, and to quote Frank Borman when he was orbiting the moon on Apollo 8, and God bless all of us on the good earth.
I took a flat to a pawn shop. or a broken guitar. I took a flat to a pawn shop. How much is that guitar? I took a flat to a pawn shop. Got me that guitar. What's a flat in a pawn shop to me? I saw a man on the TV in a mask with a gun. A man on the TV, he had a 10-year-old son. I saw a man on the TV, his son had a gun. Yeah.